Welcome to this Good Friday edition of the Real News. I'm David Knight. We have some interesting things to take up today. Of course, the world was set on fire yesterday, I think, pretty much. As Matt Drudge put at the top of the Drudge Report, the Pope said there's no hell. The Vatican immediately pushed back. We're going to take a look at that. And I think whether you are a Catholic, a non-Catholic, a Christian, a non-Christian, an atheist, I think you're going to find this to be a very interesting topic. Because this Pope has been very political. That's really where his heart is. We're going to focus on that. We're also going to talk about his actions with pedophiles. I think that shows that maybe he doesn't believe there's a hell. Show me your faith by your works. I think when you do the kinds of things and don't do the kinds of things that this Pope and this Catholic Church has been doing, this leadership has been doing, we just had the conclusion of the trial. No verdict yet. But a conclusion of the trial of the number three ranking person in the Vatican on the same day that this came out. We had Cardinal Pell in Australia. Why? Because they removed the statute of limitations on pedophiles. And this kind of institutional pedophilia at the same time that globalist, elitist politics, Marxist politics are being pushed by this institution. We need to lift the veil of how this is being used, because as I see this Pope being used, he's being used in the same way that David Hogg is being used. Don't you dare talk about the Pope. Don't you dare talk about David Hogg. These people, however, are the avatars, the pitch men, if you will, the con men who are selling us these globalist politics. But they're above reproach. Cannot talk about them. Cannot criticize them. A lot of conservative Catholics like Pat Buchanan are saying, what is going on? What have we seen from this Pope? He's been overturning one by one all the traditional beliefs of the Catholic Church and then moving very heavily in this Marxist direction. We're also going to be talking about War and Peace. Today is the anniversary, 45th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War. Last night, President Trump said again that maybe we should use the defense budget to build the war. He is absolutely right. And, of course, NPR is upset about this. Schumer is upset about this. They're talking about how they're going to use the judges to shut this down. And President Trump is exactly right to do this, and he could very easily do this. They're saying, oh, there's no way he can do it. And if he does it, we're going to shut him down with the judiciary. The president is going to have to exert his constitutional powers to operate independent of the judiciary when he is enforcing law that was lawfully enacted, when he is enforcing the borders of the country. We've had judicial activists in California and New York shut him down, say, no, you can't do any vetting of people coming into the country. No, you can't do that. And when President Obama and his Homeland Secretary, Napolitano, said she wasn't going to enforce the law, you cannot enforce the law. Because I'm a judge, and I'm going to tell you, you can't enforce the law. We're going to make a court case out of this. He's getting some very bad legal advice from Jeff Sessions, who is now going to engage these people in court. The president has a picture of Andrew Jackson. He likes Andrew Jackson. And it isn't just the haircut. I think there's a lot about both of them that is very similar. They're both populist, and they both were very independent of the political establishment. President Trump needs to stop looking at the picture and acting like President Jackson, who knew that the judiciary does not have any power to enforce its opinions. They're just opinions. It's very interesting that these judges have opinions. As a matter of fact, they didn't, when they stopped President Trump on DACA, they didn't oppose him on legal grounds. They opposed him on his opinions that they had imputed to him that were not in the law, because the law had already been settled. It was Obama and Janet Napolitano who decided they would not enforce the law. And it was John Kelly who decided that he would not enforce the law as Homeland Security. He took an oath to the Constitution. He took an oath to uphold our laws, to uphold our borders. John Kelly didn't do that. President Trump needs to do that. It is not only his delegated powers, but it is his duty and his promise to do that. Stay with us. Be right back.
You found it. It's the Real News. Live from the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome on this Good Friday. I'm David Knight. We're going to be talking about the controversy with the Pope and the pushback by the Vatican. You know, this is, interestingly enough, this is not the first time that this reporter has reported things that the Pope has said, and the Vatican has had to do damage control. Why is it that this keeps happening? I would think that after this happens once, you know, the first time, it was, well, I had this conversation with the Pope, and he said 2% of the priests are pedophiles. Only 2%. Only 2%. Well, that's about 8,000 priests, if that's true. And immediately the Vatican comes back, no, he didn't say that. No, he didn't say that. Then they have another meeting, and the Pope says, well, you know, you don't have to be a Christian. You just have to follow your conscience and be a good guy. And so he reported that, and they said, no, that's not true. That's not true. And now we have the other one that's come. And there's been other conversations between the two of them. They're longtime friends. This guy, this reporter in Italy, is a longtime atheist, a longtime Marxist. Ooh, there's a connection to this Pope. Why are they such good friends? They just get together and talk Marxist politics, I guess. Prior to this, Eugenio Scalfari, I think, or Scalfari, this reporter, who is quite old. He's now 93. He created the newspaper La Repubblica. And it was a hard left, hard Marxist paper when he was there. It's now moderated somewhat. So it's just now leftist. It's not hard left like it was when he was there. And throughout his career, he opposed the Vatican. He opposed the Catholic Church. He opposed vociferously every pope. But he's been a close friend of this pope. Why is that? We're going to talk about that later. I think you'll find it interesting, regardless of what your religious or philosophical beliefs are. And we're going to have something to say about that. But today I want to start out with, and let's actually start out with video clip number 7. Because I had Cuomo, Andrew Cuomo on CNN saying, nobody is calling for the repeal of the Second Amendment. This is just an old, senile, retired Supreme Court judge that's saying that. Nobody is really saying that. Let's play that clip for Cuomo.
Brother, and you got the President of the United States this morning tweeting that the Second Amendment will never be repealed. We must have more who's calling for a repeal of the Second Amendment?
Who's calling for it? Justice Stevens did.
But he did not. It was in the context of a conversation about
not?
The fastest route to legal change. And, of course, if you didn't have a Second Amendment, you wouldn't have Heller. It would be easier to change the laws. He's not a politician. He's not in office. He's not the head of any kind of significant group. It's a boogeyman.
He takes it upon himself to change the Constitution.
That does not breed unity. It's a boogeyman, and you know it.
It's not a boogeyman. And Cuomo was obviously lying there. If you read, I spent probably a half hour deconstructing that op-ed piece from John Paul Stevens. And this is a guy who believes that he has the right to change the Constitution with his opinions or the collective opinions of the Supreme Court. And he went down how all of it's not an individual right. They made a mistake. That needs to be undone. But he goes, the only way that you're really going to get any of this stuff done is to repeal the Second Amendment. It's flawed. It no longer applies and so forth. So Cuomo was lying to you. He knew he was lying to you. But we got some honest opinions from Larry King. Somebody came up to him and caught him as he's walking into a building. And I want to play for you what Larry King had to say yesterday. He said the Second Amendment has to go. And the reason, folks, is because, you guessed it, it's racist. Here's Larry King.
Retired Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens is advocating...
I favor changing the Second Amendment.
Well, he's saying repeal the Second Amendment.
Yeah, repeal it. Right in.
Repeal it. Yeah, so? I know that's what he said. Repeal it. I agree with that.
So you'd like to just rewrite it.
What they mean by militia.
Right.
You know,
what they mean by it. We know.
Southern senators... So they could ward off slaves.
Uh-huh. Really?
Southern senators.
Yeah. Is that true?
And they're slaves.
Read the history.
I don't have time right now. Can you just give me a brief background?
No, it was started. Eventually, they won in other areas, but Southern senators started it so they could repel slave uprisings.
Oh, okay. So in that regard.
They wanted to be able to protect themselves against black people.
Yeah, correct. That's Second Amendment's go, and the NRA is the worst.
Yeah, the NRA is the worst. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, look at it. It was set up to stop slave uprisings. Well, first of all, where do you start with this? Yeah, Second Amendment's got to go. It's racist. It was set up to stop slave uprisings. All right, let's just forget about history for a moment here. Let's forget about whether Larry King is right about history. Let's just give him that. Let's say, because we've had not just Larry King, but we've had several people now put out this notion that Second Amendment has to go because it was used to enslave black people. The white people with guns enslaved the black people who didn't have guns. Think about that for a minute. Think about that for a minute. The original Black Panthers did. That's why they armed themselves. But just think about that. Think about the cognitive dissonance here of Larry King. Yeah, yeah, it was used to enslave people. So give up your guns and become slaves. That's amazing. I would just say that clip can only characterize it as dumb and even dumber. Not only is he ignorant about history, but he's stupid in his conclusions. Yeah, guns are used to enslave people who don't have guns. Mao said, power comes out of the barrel of a gun. You don't have to pull the trigger. You just point it at people, and that power just flows to the crowd. I remember when we were in China, the place, you cannot believe, when you go shopping in China, when you go into a street area or a Walmart or anything, the sea of people. It's like New York City on St. Patrick's Day, everywhere you go, especially around shopping areas. And so I was there with my family. We're getting some things for my daughter. And this armored car pulls up. I was like, look at this. And they had some guys, you could see them in the windows. They were serious. I mean, they had shotguns and stuff. They were standing there. And then the door opens up, and a couple of guys jump out, and they level their guns at the crowd. And we're in the crowd. I said, let's get out of here. The crowd started partying like the Red Sea. And it's like the power was flowing out of the barrel of those shotguns. We did not want to be shot. I didn't want to be shot by accident. I didn't want one of these guys to stumble and have his finger. I mean, that, you know, we talk about, barrel control on the shooting range or whatever. These guys, when somebody points a gun at you, that's a serious thing, folks. You don't point a gun at somebody unless you intend to shoot them. You take that very seriously. And it's a very offensive thing when you do that to somebody when you're out shooting. You don't ever point a gun at somebody. Loaded or unloaded, you never do it. And these guys, just massive crowd, come out, level the guns and start sweeping it around, you know, like it was some kind of we're all terrorists or something. Yeah, power flows out of the barrel of a gun, Larry. It really does. And if you want to be a slave, then give up your gun. And we've talked about this. How crazy is this? All the people saying Trump is Hitler, but give him all your guns. It makes absolutely no sense. But let's talk about the historical thing for just a second here. These people, if you remember, here's a question for Larry King. When did the American Revolution begin? Bing. Time is up. It began at Concord and Lexington when they came for the guns and the cannons. That's when it began. There was a standoff. There was a shot that was heard around the world. You might have heard about that if you go back to your elementary school, because I'm sure at the time that Larry King was in elementary school, they actually taught American history. I don't think they do anymore. But the people who the king said had no right to own guns and who the king had sent his troops to take their guns and cannons said, no, we do have a God-given right that supersedes the king's commands, and we're going to enforce that right. And they enshrined that right that they had from God. They didn't get it from government. It wasn't something that government had given to them. It was something that they possessed as human beings. They were born with that freedom. They were given that freedom by God, their creator. And they said, our government is never going to take that away. And they're right. It's not. Even if you repeal the government, even if you repeal the Second Amendment and the Constitution, you're not going to take our guns away. Newsflash, Larry King. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Thank you.
gotta say, at least Larry King was honest, unlike Andrew Cuomo on CNN. At least he was honest. However, he was ignorant of history and amazingly stupid in his conclusion, saying, well, the Second Amendment was intended to enslave people. Therefore, give up your guns and become slaves. I mean, that is incredibly stupid and ignorant of history. But, you know, the editorial that kicked all this off, and he understood that John Paul Stevens was calling for the repeal of the Second Amendment. He said, yeah, he was calling for the repeal. I want it repealed as well. And this isn't the first time that we've had detailed, explicit calls and arguments made for the repeal of the Second Amendment. Here's one from Rolling Stones. Why it's time to repeal the Second Amendment? I teach the Constitution for a living, writes the author, so forth and so on. But sometimes we have to acknowledge that the founders of the Constitution are wrong, and this is one of those times. We need to say it loud and clear. The Second Amendment must be repealed, writes a constitutional teacher for the Rolling Stones. New York Times, to repeat, repeal the Second Amendment. This is an editorial by Brett Stevens. And this was just as recently as February the 16th. Kurt Eichenwald. For Vanity Fair, let's repeal the Second Amendment, and on and on and on. That was after Sandy Hook. It happens all the time. We get these editorials regularly from these people. And the reason they're pushing back, and the reason you have Andrew Cuomo lying, is because it has caused the NRA's political fund donations to spike, People are waking up to what their true agenda is. They've had a lot of Democrats. And a Washington Post reporter, I read that to you the day after that, said, shut up, this doesn't help us. This is going to be the biggest gift to the NRA and the Republicans. And yeah, it is. It is. Because we understand where you're coming from. But as we look at these avatars of these people, and this is one of the reasons why I want to talk about the Pope. Because like David Hogg, the Pope is being used as a front man to push a political agenda. And then they're supposedly not allowed to be criticized. And if you do criticize somebody like David Hogg, as Laura Ingraham has discovered, then he comes out and comes after you. And you have CNBC saying she mocked a survivor of the Parkland High School shooting. Mocked a survivor. Well, you know, CNN mocked a survivor. They mocked him and his father quite severely. Did not allow them in the town hall and then mocked them when they spoke out about it. They were never called on any of that. They mocked them viciously. Laura Ingraham even tweeted out her apologies. She bowed before David Hogg. I mean, he's not having any of it. He tweeted out to his 600,000 some odd followers, here's a list of 12 top Laura Ingraham advertisers. Boycott them. And they started their letter writing thing. TripAdvisor, as if 15-year-olds are going to be taking trips. Look, a lot of these people, yeah, maybe they buy a lot of chocolate, so Nestle's may be worried about that. Wayfair is some company I'd never heard of before. I don't watch Laura. Sorry, Laura, don't watch it. But I don't think you ought to be cowed into submission. Let me tell you what this reminds me of. Do you remember the movie Invasion of the Body Snatchers? And this scene at the end? Let's play that for people, because I think Donald Sutherland's character is maybe, you know, what David Hogg might look like if he gets when he gets old enough to grow a mustache. But here's that scene, just to remind you. This is Laura Ingraham meeting David Hogg. He slowly turns. She walks up. Thanks. He just points at her and screams. And she can't handle it. No, my sponsors, my multi-million-dollar salary, it's going down the drain. I can't handle it. Yeah. You know, that can be a real, you know, when you make a lot of money at Fox News, that can really undermine your credibility. I don't get paid enough money that I don't care if these people take me off the air. It's just, but when you make millions of dollars, she probably makes more than I make in a week or maybe a day. She probably makes more than I make in a day than I make in a year. But, you know, when that money can become a crutch, can't it? Being respectable, having access to all the people in the Republican Party, just like CNN has access to all the people in the Democrat Party. You want to talk to a Democrat? Pick up the phone, call Party Central. Central Casting. They'll send a politician right over. CNN or Fox, Republican or Democrat, which one do you want? You can go there. They've always got access. You don't want to lose that access. You don't want to lose your sponsors. You got a multi-million dollar salary. Yeah, that kind of puts a knife to your back. And she's feeling it. So she is begging him. You know, what did she say that was so horrible? Well, she was kind of laughing at the fact, and I laughed at the fact as well, the fact that he had TMZ, he had Daily Mail out there advocating for him. He said, well, it hasn't been too great for me. I wanted to go to UCLA, UC Santa Barbara, UC Irvine, UC San Diego. I sent them all these things, and they didn't do it. It hasn't been too great for me and some of the other members of the movement. If colleges want to support us, that's great. But if they don't, it doesn't matter. We're still going to change the world. And she pointed out, well, it's totally predictable. Don't whine about it. You have a B average. His 4.2 GPA or 4.1, I've seen some places. That's a B average in a 4.0 system, be about 3.2. Nothing to get excited about. Oh, but he thinks they should make an exception for him because the media and Hollywood love him. He's now a celebrity, so he should get a pass. And she said that, in a sense. Don't whine about it. And the TMZ reporter came back and said, he wasn't whining. I was saying that he ought to be given a pass because he's an activist. And Daily Mail got on the phone and called up these universities. Why aren't you letting him in? Well, they have standards. And they're obviously not willing to put these aside. And so Ingram apologizes, and yet he won't accept it. He says, I will only accept her apology if she condemns Fox News. I will only accept your apology if you denounce the way your network has treated my friends and I in this fight. Hey, you know what? You want to get in the political arena, pal? You're going to get some dirt on your face. Get ready for it. You've recovered enough from your shooting to talk about and to lecture us on what we need to do in politics. You get ready for people to push back. We're going to push back against what you say. We're going to push back about the way you're acting. And that's all fair game in the public arena, except when you are protected by the media and by Google, who will shut down people who push back against him, and by the sponsors that will boycott people. They're just waiting for an excuse to boycott people. And as the Hill points out, the apology highlights the growing power of Hogg. You know what this is? This is the Salem witch trials in reverse. You had a bunch of teens and preteens in the Salem witch trials, and they started doing just what you saw the character out of Invasion of the Body Snatchers do. Pointing at people, right? It cost 20 people their lives. Now, what these people are doing is also like the Salem witch hunt, except they begin and they do it on top of the bodies of 17 people. It's kind of the Salem witch hunt. It is a witch hunt, and it is an invasion of the gun snatchers. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Studios in Austin, Texas. It's The Real News with your host, David Knight.
Well, it's Good Friday. And just in time for Good Friday. And some people say, well, maybe this is a planned scandal to try to taint the Catholic Church for Good Friday. This is something that has happened multiple times with this particular individual that the Pope talked to. As CNS pointed out, this is a story that was linked by Drudge. In another interview with his longtime atheist friend, Eugenio Scalfari. And so this is another interview. Every one of these interviews has resulted in massive scandal. So why is he continue to do this? Why is this guy such a close friend? Well, this is a guy, Eugenio Scalfari, is a man who, as I mentioned earlier, founded a very radical left wing, and it's not even leftist. They have moderated to where they are now leftist. When he was there and when he founded it, it was hard left communist. and adamantly opposed to everything, the Catholic Church, the Vatican, all the other popes, until this pope. And then they seemed to find some common bond of friendship. What could that be? Could it be Marxist liberation theology? Could it be their view on globalism? Could it be the environmentalism that they have there? But then they get together, and he starts to ask his friend the Pope about these existential Christian questions. And I got to say, I want people, as I said earlier, whether you are an atheist or whether you are a Christian or a non-Christian, a Catholic, non-Catholic, whatever you're thinking, this is really relevant. Because just like we saw with David Hogg, they create these figures that are above criticism, like the Pope. And they get the right person in there, like David Hogg. You cannot criticize David Hogg. He's a survivor of a shooting. You can't criticize Francis, no matter what he does. Or actually, what was his original? Jorge Mario Bergoglio. You can't criticize that guy, because now he's called Pope Francis. We should get a new name for David Hogg. He needs a title. Like Pope Francis. They need to change his name because it is hogwash. They need to change his name to something else to give him this kind of papal authority so that he can pontificate about gun control, because that's exactly what he's doing, and you're not allowed to criticize him. Many conservative Catholics, Pat Buchanan included, say, what's going on with this guy? And the Pope is supposed to talk about Christ, about religion. And instead, this Pope is talking about everything else. And he's had some interesting things to say about pedophiles as well. So where is his heart on all this stuff? The scandal here for people, what about bad souls? Where are they punished? He said, they're not punished. Those who repent obtain the forgiveness of God, enter the ranks of souls who contemplate him. But those who do not repent and cannot therefore be forgiven disappear. There is no hell. There is the disappearance of sinful souls, to which the Catholic Church comes out and says, no, that's not what we believe. It's not, you know, so forth. Doing damage control again. And as I pointed out, there have been multiple instances of this guy that he's talked to, this friend of his. Back in 2013, right after the Pope became Pope, they had a conversation. And this atheist friend was talking to him about the pedophile problem at the time, because the Pope said he was going to do something about it. And the Pope said, according to his friend, Eugenio Scalfari said, the Pope said, there's only about 2% of the priests that are pedophiles. That's about 8,000 priests. Have you seen 8,000 priests removed? No, you haven't, have you? Now, when he said that figure again, the Vatican comes out, oh, no, that's not true. That's not true. Don't listen. Then also in 2013, the same reporter reprinted a letter from the Pope. And this is what they're saying in both that first one and this most recent one, the three big ones that have been big scandals. They say that they get together, they have these long conversations, and this reporter, who is now 93 and retired officially from this paper, says that he doesn't take notes, he doesn't do recordings, so these are treated as off the record. They say he didn't record this accurately. And yet the Pope doesn't come back and push back against these things. And in the middle of these three scandals, there was one where the Pope had previously said in his conversation, as a matter of fact, this was a letter to Eugenio Scalfaria, and he reprinted that in his paper. And here's the money quote. The Pope said, God's mercy has no limits. If he asks for mercy, does so in contrition with a sincere heart. The issue for those who do not believe in God is in obeying their own conscience. Let your conscience be your guide. You don't need the church. You don't need Christ. Your conscience. Follow your conscience. That's all that matters. And if you follow your conscience, you won't disappear. But if you don't, you'll disappear. That's the new theology that we're seeing here. It's the Pinocchio theology from Disney. Let your conscience be your guide. And we can see the Pope's nose growing and growing and growing. But let's talk about what Pat Buchanan has to say, because this is what a lot of conservative Catholics are saying. They're very troubled about the fact that the response from the Catholic Church officially is, well, there was no, this is not an official quotation, it's not accurate, and so forth. And yet we haven't heard anything from the Pope, and Pat Buchanan says, sorry, this won't do. He says, however one may applaud Francis's stance on social justice, on matters of faith and morals, he's called defined doctrine into question numerous times, created confusion throughout the church that he leads. He seemed to give approval to the receiving of Holy Communion by divorced and remarried Catholics whose previous marriages had not been annulled and whom the church holds to be living in adultery. When asked early in his papacy about the immorality of homosexuality, the Pope parried the question, "Who am I to judge?" To legalize the underground Catholic Church in China, and this just recently happened, the Pope and the Vatican have agreed to ask Catholic bishops to stand aside for bishops that have been approved by the Communist Party. President Xi Jinping has now said, "We are going to have approval. We are going to be the ones to select the leaders of the Catholic Church in China. We will. And it will be based on their rejection of the Trinity." And the Vatican, led by this Pope, says, "Okay, we'll do that. We'll do that." The Archbishop of Hong Kong said the Vatican is selling out the church in China. He says, "Some say that the effort to reach an agreement is to avoid an ecclesiastical schism. But how ridiculous. The schism is there in the independent church." And so here's the issue, folks. Regardless of, we're not going to talk about how many angels fit on the head of a pin. Don't worry. Okay? We're not going to get into a Bible discussion here. But what you see here is a Pope who doesn't care about the traditional conservative Christian doctrines of the church. What he cares about is political power. Political power. He doesn't want to offend the wrong people, whether that's the homosexual lobby, or whether it's public opinion, or whether it is a Chinese dictator. And I have to ask you, as we look at our society moving forward on this Good Friday, are some cultures that are based on some religions better than others? Let me just give you two examples. Here's one coming out of South Africa. A South African convicted of murdering four children to sell ears to a witch doctor. A judge in South Africa just sentenced a man to four life sentences in prison Tuesday for the murder of his nieces and nephews. They didn't even go get strangers. Did this to people in his own family. He confessed that he planned to sell the ears at a high price to a witch doctor to use in potions. Oh, we would never do that here in America, would we? Did you ever hear about Planned Parenthood and their baby parts? He was going to get $75,000 for a whole body. I don't know how that compares with what Planned Parenthood gets. We just refunded Planned Parenthood, by the way. And James Dobson, to Focus on the Family, is furious about it. How in the world can we give $500 million to people who butcher children by the millions? That's what happens when religion no longer informs a culture. Here's another one. Italian police arrest an Islamic teacher who supported ISIS, taught jihad to his children as young as 4 years old, teaching children as young as 4 years old to wield weapons against unbelievers, saying, "I invite you to fight the unbelievers with your swords. Cut off their heads. With your explosive belts, you blow their heads up in the air." When we divorce ourselves and when we cut the threads to our moral anchors, if you don't have anywhere to run to and you're a pedophile priest, don't worry, they'll relocate you to another location where nobody knows you. But one day that's going to run out. You know, when we look at this and the back and forth statements from the Vatican saying, "Well, he didn't really say that." No, he does believe there's a hell. I'm going to tell you, when you look at what this man is doing and what he has not done, that he effectively does not believe that there is a hell. He doesn't believe there's a God. Nobody would do the types of things that the Pope and his inner circle, Cardinal Pell, who just yesterday, I'm going to give you an update on this, just yesterday, the committal hearing, which I think in Australia is kind of like a grand jury, is a hearing to see whether there's going to be evidence to go to a formal criminal trial for this guy, the number three guy in the Vatican. And let me just give you a tease for this here. This is something out of New York Magazine, June of last year, well into the Pope's pontificate. One of his closest aides, third highest official in the Catholic Church, has now been credibly accused of several acts of sexual assault, including one of rape. In 2015, Australia's Channel 9 ran a 60-minute segment that can only be called horrifying, and it one of Francis's own appointees to investigate sex abuse, Peter Saunders, described Cardinal Pell's record on sex abuse as almost sociopathic, quote-unquote. Pell had, quote, a catalog of denials, a catalog of denigrating people, of acting with callousness, Saunders said on camera. I would go so far, he said, as to say that I consider him to be a quite dangerous individual. So he's now on trial. And that just ended yesterday, the hearing, to see whether or not he is going to go to trial. And when we look at what the issue is with this pope, he has been political from the very beginning. Remember, this is the first Jesuit pope the Catholic Church has ever had. Jesuits are bound by oath not to seek a higher office. But Jorge Mario Bergoglio, as a Jesuit, did. And it's kind of interesting. As he began pontificate or his popism or what, when he became pope, let's just put it that way. I'm sorry, I don't know what the problem, I'm not trying to make fun of it. I don't know what the appropriate term is here. He went to Bolivia, and they have a Marxist president who's very proud of being a Marxist. And if you remember, go back and think about this. I'd forgotten about it. I was going back and looking at articles about things that he had done that were involved with liberation theology. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. This Marxist president in Bolivia gave him a crucifix with a hammer and sickle on it. And as some of the people pointed out, if you'd given that to John Paul, the guy who is the pope who fought communism because he saw it as an oppressor of the people, he saw it for what it was in Poland. Said he would have thrown that away. He would never have taken it. But, of course, this pope did. He took the hammer and sickle cross, and he said, I understand this work. For me, it wasn't an offense. And after the visit, the Marxist president of Bolivia, Evo Morales, gushed and said, I feel like now I have a pope. I didn't feel like that before. And see, I think that's what's going on with this reporter from La Repubblica, Eugenio Scalfaria. He never liked any popes. He never liked the Catholic Church. He never liked the Vatican until this pope. What is it? Oh, there's a commonality there. Liberation theology is the combination of Catholicism and Marxism. It offers a Marxist understanding of poverty and oppression. Now, the Catholic Church says that this pope is not a liberation theologist, but let me give you some examples of this. Not only was there that thing there with the crucifix, but 6 months, reports the New York Times, 6 months after becoming the first Latin American pontiff, Pope Francis invited an octogenarian priest from Peru for a private chat in his Vatican residence. You know, kind of like he has chats with this Marxist atheist from the newspaper. The September 2013 meeting with the priest Gustavo Gutierrez soon became public, and it was quickly interpreted as a defining shift in the Roman Catholic Church. Father Gutierrez is the founder of liberation theology that embraces the poor, calls for social change, which conservatives once scorned as overtly Marxist. It is. It is. And the Vatican has in the past treated liberation theology with hostility. Now the Pope embraces it. And I've got an article, 13 times a Pope promoted liberation theology. I'll spare you all the different catalogs, but let me just give you a couple of samples here. First one. Each individual Christian, every community is called to be an instrument of God for the liberation and promotion of the poor. Well, okay, that's kind of mild, but then it gets a little bit more explicit. Number two, responsibility for the poor and the marginalized must therefore be an essential element of any political decision. Why is he even getting involved in politics? Well, because he's a liberation theologist. He's a Marxist. He says it must be involved in any political decision, whether on a national or international level. The gospel that liberates is what he's talking about. Gets rid of consumerism in an atheistic society. He goes on to say, the growth of inequality. Let me ask you this. Is this Karl Marx or is this the Pope? Because this sounds like Marxism, these next two. The growth of inequality and poverty undermines inclusive and participatory democracy at risk, which always presupposes an economy and an equitable and non-exclusive market. I mean, this sounds like some kind of Marxist claptrap out of his manifesto. There are economic systems that must make war in order to survive. That is pure Marxism, folks, but that is the Pope. See, he is selling Marxism, which has always been an underlying tool of the globalists. Remember when I was laughing about the fact earlier this week that Kim Jong-un went to go see the Chinese president, Xi Jinping, and they put him on a SEAL train? I said, oh, it's kind of like the German bankers, the capitalist German central bankers put Lenin on a SEAL train, gave him $10 million in gold, and sent him to start the Russian Revolution. Because, see, the capitalists, the globalists, the bankers are really Marxists. They use that. They use that. And then he's got Marxist people that he's putting in leadership position. And he has put in Arturo Sosa Abascal, a Venezuelan communist. Pope Francis has been planting Marxists throughout the church, including at the top of the troubled religious order to which he belongs. This guy, Sosa, has written about, quote, the Marxist mediation of the Christian faith, quote unquote. He said the church should, quote, understand the existence of Christians who simultaneously call themselves Marxists and commit themselves to the transformation of the capitalist society into a socialist society. In 1989, he signed a letter praising Fidel Castro. But, you know, we have Emma Gonzalez put that that Cuban flag. Oh, that's about heritage. It's not about hate, right? It's not about communism. That's what we're told. I actually tweeted out, somebody put together a meme and said, oh yeah, it's not about hate. It's about a heritage, just like, you know, they tell everybody, oh, no, you can't have a rebel flag up because that's about hate. It's not about heritage. But then they give Emma Gonzalez a pass. They give this guy a pass, and the Pope gives him a promotion. And back in 2015, we're following him around, and he was talking about CNN, Pope Francis gets political in Washington. He talks about climate change, Cuba, traditional marriage, which he denigrated. Greeted by exuberant crowds packing the streets of Washington, introducing himself as the son of an immigrant family. And then there's the environmentalism above all else. Remember, he put out an encyclical. Big part of the Catholic Church, putting out an encyclical. And the guy that he had as one of the key writers for this encyclical and reading the encyclical was John Schellenhuber, who's always been at the center of these globalist confabs with Prince Charles. They want to create an Earth League. These globalist environmentalists, the Earth League, they've called for Prince Charles and John Schellenhuber, an Earth Constitution that would transcend the UN Charter. They want a global council. They want members elected by everybody on the Earth. They want a planetary council. They want a transnational legal body. They want an Earth Constitution. You start to get the idea? And this is where the Pope fits in, because he's there. David Hogg. He's a David Hogg for world government, just like David Hogg is the little avatar that you can't talk about, you cannot touch, you cannot push back against this guy for gun control. Well, the Pope fills that role for the world government. And the other thing that John Schellenhuber talked about, oh, we got 6 billion too many people, so we got to get rid of some of them. Now, when you talk about pedophilia, that's where I say I think the Pope really doesn't believe there's a hell. Because he comes out and he talks tough. He says, he said, pedophile priests should have no right of appeal against being kicked out of the church. I will never pardon any of them. He says, the reality of the old practice of moving pedophile priests from one diocese to the other puts people's consciences to sleep. And then he goes to Chile. Remember this? This just happened. He said, he asked for forgiveness about the irreparable damage that was done to children who were raped and molested by Catholic priests in Chile. He met with a small group of abuse survivors at a strictly private gathering. He prayed with them. He wept with them. He made no mention of the guy who actually did this. Now, this is a guy who escaped any criminal charges because of statute of limitations. That's what they put in at the upper levels of government everywhere. So the pedophiles, who are part of the upper level of government, never get punished. They sentenced this guy to a lifetime of penance and prayers, all he got. But people were very upset about the bishop who enabled this. And then the Pope accused them of slander. And everybody said, what is he doing? Yeah, he's covering up.
And now, live and uncensored, broadcasting from the great state of Texas, worldwide, it's David Knight.
Welcome back. Yeah, you know, when we look at what's going on with the Pope, just one quick thing I want to add here. And that is, we have seen several different occasions where he spent a great deal of time, continues to talk to his longtime friend that he gives many interviews to, and who is a Marxist atheist. And I think in that they have a great deal in common. I think they're both Marxist atheists, quite frankly. You know, whether you believe in God, it's, as James said, You know, even demons believe, right? But show me your faith by your works. What is it that he does? He, just in the same way that he makes these statements in private to these people, he went down and in public, he attacked people. After coming down and making a big show of apologizing to victims of pedophile priests, then he gets on the plane and he gets very angry because other people said, well, there's a bishop that was involved in this too. He says, I don't see any evidence of that. He says, there's not one shred of proof against him. It's all calumny. In other words, slander. He goes, is that clear? Very angry about it. And then it blew up worldwide in the press. It undid everything that he had done. So this is the kind of behavior that we have seen from this this pope. And one of the people who was a victim of this guy who is not going to be going to jail, he was sentenced to a lifetime of prayer and penance by the church because the criminal justice system will not get any justice with him. And one of these victims says, as if I could have taken a selfie. You want some evidence? As if I could have taken a selfie or a photo while Karadima abused me and others. And Juan Barrios, this is the guy that was being defended by the Pope, Juan Barrios stood by watching it all. As Barrios' most vocal accuser, Juan Carlos Cruz, he said, these people are truly crazy. And the pontiff talks about atonement to the victims. Nothing has changed. His plea for forgiveness is empty. So everybody goes, you know, what did he go down there for? He just undid everything that he did. And then he goes back and he apologizes a bit for that. But then this other story, one more, and I'll tell you, you know, because we don't know what's going to happen with Cardinal Pell yet. But one more. Pope Francis was told, and this came out in December 2016. Pope Francis was told in 2014 that a Catholic priest accused of sexually abusing children in Italy had been reassigned to a school in Argentina, where he has been since arrested on suspicion of child rape. Remember the beginning of all this? The Pope said, oh, yeah, we're not going to have this situation where we quietly shift somebody off somewhere where nobody knows that they are a child molester. And then they continue with it when they go. See, that's the worst thing about it, putting a sexual offender like that somewhere else so nobody knows where they are. He was arrested late November 2016 alongside four other men following allegations of abuse at an Institute for Deaf Children. Deaf children. Deaf to their pleas for help. And so was the Pope, because there were two dozen students who sent a letter to the Pope in 2014 naming this guy, saying he's abusing us. And the Pope turned a deaf ear to those deaf children. Don't tell me that's not the heart of a man that believes there's no God. Absolutely disgusting. And they use these people as avatars. Just as I said, David Hogg, you can't criticize that guy. You can't criticize the Pope. They deserve it. They deserve more than I can say on the radio, believe me. We just had the Austin police chief. Remember, he got into a lot of people criticized him because he wasn't politically correct. He wouldn't accuse this white Austin bomber of being a terrorist. CNN said, well, he can't bring himself to say it because this kid is white. Well, now he has seen the light. He has been intimidated. He said, now I actually agree that he was a domestic terrorist for what he did to us. He said, I was trying to go by the legal term. You know, the legal term is you use violence and crimes to achieve a political goal. He didn't have a political goal. So he says, yeah, I was using the thing. But now I realize because he was white, we gave him the benefit of being a human first. We did. We had a perceived racial insensitivity. This is a guy who desperately wants to get hired.
You found it. It's the real news. Live from the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. Joining us in the next segment will be Alex Newman of The New American. And we'll be talking to him about a variety of issues. I said I wanted to talk to him about climate change, globalism. I mean, we've been talking about the Pope. He has become the front man for selling that. So I think it'd be good to pick up on that with Alex Newman. He can talk about a variety of things, and so we'll see what's on his mind. But before we do, real quickly, I want to remind you about the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. That's what keeps this program going. It's what keeps us independent. Well, we will not be shut down in intimidation like Laura Ingraham. Unfortunately, she, even after she apologized for something that she didn't have to apologize to David Hogg, he said, that's not good enough. You must renounce Fox News. A little tyrant. So we'll see if she's going to renounce Fox News or if she'll continue to have her sponsors renounce her. I don't know. What she said was really pretty mild. But I want to tell you about some of the specials that are InfoWarsStore.com right now. We have CellForce, The Real Red Pill, Myco ZX Plus, all those, 50% off. We also have Alexa Pure Breeze, $50 off. A great way to clean your house. It's very silent and very effective air filter, very attractive. It's got a little wave light on the front that shows you if it's working because it's so silent. You need to have that. We have one in our home. We have multiple units of this all over our office here, and it is very, very effective. I highly recommend that. That's now $50 off Alexa Pure Breeze, an air filter. We also have Super Blue Silver Immune Gargle, 33% off, a new product in the Super Blue line that has nano silver in it. You know, nano silver is a very effective way to kill not only bacteria, but virus as well. And I always take silver with me when I travel. This is something that you can use as a gargle, and you can use it on your hands as well. Super Blue Gargle, 33% off. Take a look at InfoWarsStore.com. Finally, one more thing I'll mention, Brain Force Plus, my favorite supplement that we have, is now 50% off in a combo. The Real Red Pill, Brain Force Plus, and Body Challenge. All three of those together, 50% off. Today is the 45th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War. And as the Free Thought Project pointed out in their headline, it's time to do the same thing again in Afghanistan. It was yesterday, March 29th, 1973. The U.S. withdrew the last of its combat troops from Vietnam and the last prisoners of war. Well, some people would dispute that. Some people would say some of the soldiers were left behind. But as he points out here, says it's a clear reminder that the U.S.'s 16-year war with Afghanistan must come to an end. Says before the U.S. funded and aided proxy wars in the Middle East in the name of ending the war on terror, it did the same thing in Vietnam and Korea in the name of stopping the spread of communism. And so I want to ask you today, was the domino theory correct? What does Vietnam look like now? The communists won there. Did they want to join China? Did they want to be puppets of China? They are now pushing back against China. And if you watch the documentary, The Fog of War, Robert McNamara and Errol Morris, wasn't his name, the director? Genius director. I love that guy's films. Thin Blue Line really broke new ground in a thought-provoking documentary about a guy who was on death row. He actually, this guy, Errol Morris, was actually a detective, an expert interviewer and interrogator. And the other thing that he did to remove himself out of the situation was he used a teleprompter in reverse. You know, we don't use teleprompters here. But you've probably seen the teleprompters that they use on Fox News and CNN and so forth, where they tell them what to say and they just read it. So they're in the camera. The camera's in a little reflective box. But what he did was, instead of putting a scrolling script through the teleprompter, he got a feed of his face. And so people were just talking to somebody on a box. And this is long ago, before we had anything like Skype or whatever. But he found that as he was talking to them, I think it had more to do with his skills as an interrogator than it did with this device. He called it his Interrotron. But as he would talk to people, they would open up to him. And he talked to Robert McNamara for a couple of days. And Robert McNamara got very frank with him. And he turned it into a documentary called The Fog of War. One of the things that Robert McNamara said, see, they went back on one of the anniversaries of the Vietnam War, and he met with some of the leaders of North Vietnam who had won. And they said, what did you think you were doing? That nonsense with the domino theory. Don't you know anything about history? So we had fought for our independence against the Chinese for 1,000 years. Then we fought against the French. That's why we were fighting against you. We don't want to be part of China. As a matter of fact, there's border disputes going on right now between China and Vietnam. China is still encroaching on their territory, just like they're encroaching on everybody else in the South China Sea and so forth. As I point out, 2 million civilians estimated, 1.1 million North Vietnamese and Viet Cong fighters, 250,000 South Vietnamese fighters, 58,000 U.S. military members died in the Vietnam War. A war that was arguably not necessary, but certainly poorly managed. The Afghanistan war has now cost us more than $1 trillion and more than 31,000 civilian deaths. Can we stop it? You know, I had President Trump yesterday talk about the border wall. Let's hear what President Trump had to say.
And we didn't have one Democrat who voted for that. They want to raise your taxes. And they want people to come in from the border. And they want, I guess, want. I can't imagine they want. But certainly drugs are flowing across borders. We need walls. We started building our wall. I'm so proud of it. We started. We have 1.6 billion. And we've already started. You saw the pictures yesterday. I said, what a thing of beauty. And on September 28th, we go further, and we're getting that sucker built. And you think that's easy? People said, oh, has he given up on the wall? No, I never give up. We have 1.6 billion toward the wall, and we've done the planning. And you saw those beautiful pictures, and that wall looks good. It's properly designed. That's what I do is I build. I was always very good at building. It was always my best thing. I think better than being president, I was maybe good at building. Like you people, you're good at building.
All right, so $1.6 billion for the wall. Question is whether it's the wall or it's a repair of an existing wall. We've seen various opinions on this. Quite frankly, I haven't read the bill myself, so I'm not going to come down on one side of the opinion of that or the other. The omnibus bill is ridiculously long and complicated. but let's just point this out, though. We're talking about $1.6 billion that they graciously gave him, whether it's for the wall or whether it's just for repair of an existing wall there. Understand that just this last week, $3.2 billion, twice that amount, was just lost in Afghanistan. They don't know where it went. The Pentagon has no idea where that money is. Now, President Trump has been talking about, I've been talking about this for a long time. In the last week, he tweeted about it. Then there was a report that he privately talked to Paul Ryan about it. The Democrats are getting concerned about it because you had Chuck Schumer come out and say, if he tries that, we're going to tie him up in courts. We're going to get our judges to attack. And now we have a report that Pentagon Press Secretary Dana White told reporters that Secretary of Defense James Mattis spoke with Trump about the request this week. NPR is writing this. NPR is worried about it. Schumer is worried about it because he could do this. He could pay for the wall, and not only can he do it, he must do it. It is his responsibility. It is his campaign promise. And he can use the military to do this. So he was talking to Secretary of Defense James Mattis. They said, quote, the secretary has talked to the president about it, said White. At a regularly scheduled briefing, he said, securing Americans and securing the nation is of paramount importance to the secretary. And then NPR starts to push back against it, just like Schumer, but in a different way. They say every federal department has some flexibility to shift money around as their needs change. The rules for the Department of Defense are the most generous of the bunch. But that extra wiggle room doesn't go far enough to cover the huge cost of building a border wall. Hey, look, they've got a black budget. They have money expressly in that budget for protecting the border of foreign countries, but not for America? Come on. This isn't a Defense Department if you don't defend the border. Does Congress authorize these wars with everybody? Do they have to authorize everything that the president does when he builds a foreign fortification? Why can't you fortify the border? Of course you can. Of course you can. And if any judge says he can't, then he needs to do what Andrew Jackson said. Let's see you enforce that order. It was Alexander Hamilton, the beloved founder of the left, the only one that they seem to like. He said the judiciary branch is the least dangerous because they have no means to enforce their decisions. President Trump, do you hear that? Stay with us. We'll be right back. Alex Newman, The New American. The people in Houston, Texas who are listening to the program on Phonoscope, Channel 9, watching this on a television broadcast. So we welcome all of you in Houston who are watching on Channel 9, Phonoscope. And we want to welcome to the broadcast right now Alex Newman, international journalist, author. He currently serves as the foreign correspondent for the New American Magazine and a contributor to WND. And I've met Alex at Bilderberg. So he's on the beat whenever there's a Bilderberg, Davos, whatever. And I want to talk to him, especially right now, about the Pope. And we'll also get into the AstroTurf gun control movement, because I think these two things, as I said in the last hour, have a great deal of overlap. They put people up in the front that you're not supposed to criticize. The Pope has really been the moral face of globalism, of climate change and so forth, and pushing a kind of Marxist socialism. But you're not supposed to criticize the Pope, just like you're not supposed to criticize David Hogg as he pontificates about things that he knows nothing about. But you have all these people behind him, pushing him and enabling him and intimidating and censoring anybody who questions him. So welcome to the show, Alex Newman of thenewamerican.com. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, David. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. Let's start with the Pope here. And we had this interesting thing about yet another pronouncement. As I point out, this is coming from a guy that he has had a lot of really sensational things that the Vatican has had to push back against in the past. And yet he still keeps meeting with him. And they seem to have an affinity. This is a guy who was a hardcore Marxist, a paper that he founded that is now moderated a little bit. But when he was there, it was a very hardcore Marxist paper. And yet this guy and the Pope are very close friends. I think they have an affinity through this liberation theology stuff that's going on here. But that's the way that they have used the Pope to sell globalism, to sell climate change, to sell communist ideas to us.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, the Pope is an interesting case. He has been, just like you said, the front man for globalism. He spoke at the United Nations promoting the climate change hoax, the Agenda 2030, which is basically a plan for global totalitarianism. And as somebody who grew up in a Catholic family in Latin America, you know, I'm very familiar with the Catholic brand practice in Latin America. And you're right, liberation theology has so infected the Catholic Church in Latin America, it's almost hard to tell where, you know, the church teachings begin and now the Marxist-Leninist doctrines that were really promoted by the Soviets begin. They kind of blur the lines there. And it really is troubling because, as you said, you know, it's hard for a lot of people to criticize the Pope, especially if they're not Catholic. They're worried that maybe they're going to be called anti-Catholic bigots. But as for this newspaper, you know, this is, I think, the third, maybe even the fourth time that the Pope and the Vatican have had to say, hey, wait a minute, you know, that transcript might not have been totally accurate. Notice they didn't actually deny that the Pope said there is no such thing as hell, which, of course, would contradict 2,000 years of Catholic teaching and, you know, essentially all Christian teaching. But something's very weird here. And, you know, the first time, what's the old saying? The first time, shame on you. Second time, shame on me. You know, third time, now something fishy's going on here. So,
yeah, why does he keep going back to this guy? Every time he goes and talks to him, there's this big scandal. And one of the scandals is based on a letter that the Pope wrote. So it was the Pope's own letter. And then the Vatican had to come back and say, well, he didn't really mean it that way and so forth. I mean, it's kind of interesting to see what this is. But his true heart is really with these globalist issues. His true heart is really in pushing climate change and Marxism. And when you look at what Pat Buchanan said, Pat Buchanan was saying, you're talking about all these doctrines that the Catholic Church has had for 2,000 years. It's not just hell. It's also marriage and the family. It's also homosexuality. It's so many different issues that the Pope either said, well, I don't really care about it, or no, I don't believe that at all. And then look at what he did in China. As we see the Chinese president exerting all of this, the power of a new Mao in China, and what they're doing is exercising power over the Catholic Church to say, we're going to appoint bishops that are friendly to us. And you and I both know what they demand from Christians, whether they're Catholic or not Catholic. They demand that they deny certain doctrines that are fundamental to the faith, like the Trinity or whatever, or they have this misunderstanding of what the kingdom of heaven is and everything. So they just go through the Bible with a razor blade and pull this stuff out. And if you teach that stuff, you're going to literally get your church torn down. You've got a church building, they're going to tear it down piece by piece. Now they're saying we're going to appoint the bishops, and the Pope says, yeah, I'm okay with that.
That's right. And, you know, getting in bed with a mass murdering communist dictatorship for me was just, you know, I was flabbergasted. How does one do this? This was a huge blow to the underground Catholic Church in China. And you're right. I mean, real Christians are persecuted beyond belief in China. You know, the government holds up these fake churches where they choose the so-called pastors and where they choose the doctrines that are taught. But the real underground church, you know, the people that meet in private houses away from the watchful eye of the Communist Party, you know, these people, they're beaten, they're imprisoned, they're tortured, they have their churches torn down. And to see the Pope agreeing with the Communist Chinese dictatorship, which has murdered more people than any government in the history of humanity. I mean, they have been just absolutely ruthless, is incredibly troubling. But I think it gives us some insight into what's going on. And, you know, for those who forget, there was a lot of intrigue in the emergence of this pope. You know, Benedict the 16th was, you know, left under very mysterious circumstances. There's yes. some evidence that the Obama administration may have had something to do with that. And, you know, there is this massive international global Marxist-Leninist movement, and they hide under various covers. And in Latin America, you know, I've covered this very extensively. Almost nobody in the United States, except the government, knows this very well. But Latin America has been taken over by a communist network. It's known as the Foro de Sao Paulo. It was founded by the mass murdering dictator Fidel Castro, the communist leader of Brazil, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, who now I think has been convicted of corruption. Now, you know, they painted him as moderate in the establishment media. This guy was a hardcore communist, and so was his successor, who was impeached, Dilma Rousseff. And through this network, the Foro de Sao Paulo, in English is the Sao Paulo Forum, Castro, the Sandinistas, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, using Odebrecht money and other things, seized control of Venezuela, of Ecuador, even of Chile with communist leader Michelle Bachelet from the Socialist Party. And they now control about two-thirds of the government. And the Pope is very much involved in this network, and people aren't talking about it. You know, this is the mm-hmm. communists who we were told didn't exist anymore after 1989 and 1991. Well, they're still alive and well in Latin America.
And he took the founder of the liberation theology movement, brought him in for private meetings, just like this guy who's been writing these articles, this communist atheist that's written these sensational articles. But he brought in the founder of liberation theology, as the New York Times pointed out, 6 months after becoming pope for a very long time. But they push back against the idea that there's any connection there with Marxism or with liberation theology. It's very interesting. But, you know, when we look at China, and the fact that they're really kind of on the same team. You know, anybody who is a globalist, whether it is the Pope or whether it is the American press, they will not criticize China no matter what they do. I find that to be very interesting as well. And we'll get on to communist China. I know you want to talk about South Africa and also about UN rape scandals, because it's the rape scandals are not just things that are happening right now with Cardinal Pell in Australia, but it is widespread with UN peacekeepers. Very well documented by The New American. They have been on top of this. And Alex Newman at thenewamerican.com. We'll be right back with Alex Newman. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We're talking to Alex Newman of The New American. We're talking about the Pope in the last segment. And just as the Pope has surrendered the appointment of Catholic bishops in China to the Chinese dictator, President Xi, you put that president in quotes because he's not going to be voted out, folks. He's there for life now. But in the same way, we have these high-tech companies that are part of the globalist confab, multinational corporations like Apple, for example. They are now using 27 Chinese suppliers, up from 19 just a year ago. Chinese suppliers have nearly quadrupled in the past years. This year's number also marks the largest spike in Chinese suppliers year to year since Apple has been disclosing suppliers since 2012. They account for 13.5% of total Apple suppliers, a 4% increase from last year. So there's one example of how they work with them. But to give you an example, what Alex mentioned just as we're going to break, he talked about the UN Agenda 2030, of course, the smart cities, the high-tech tyranny that is going to be enforced on you. Here's a sample of this, because this is the other thing about China. They are the beta test site for this high-tech tyranny. And there's an article on Zero Hedge about how they're cracking down on jaywalkers with artificial intelligence and facial recognition. You walk across the road in China and you do it as a jaywalker. It immediately recognizes you because they got everybody in their database. This is their smart cameras. Everything. It's so smart, isn't it? No, we are the ones who are dumb. I guess the cameras are smarter than we are to allow this type of thing to happen. They don't have much of a choice there, but we are willingly going into this kind of tyranny. So it takes a look. It recognizes you. It identifies you from the database facially. Then it puts your picture and a picture of the jaywalking offense, puts your family name up, puts your picture up on a large LED screen above the pavement. I mean, this is just like Minority Report. And in one of these instances, before they got this put in, one lady who was in a hurry to get to a job interview, she jaywalked. The police stopped her. She didn't have her identity card, which they all must have. That's coming for us, too, with the border control. See, they're going to put that in on Americans. Your identity papers, please. But she didn't have that. She didn't know her number. So they took a picture of her, and then it came back, and it had all of her ID in their database. So that's what we're looking at, Alex, and that's the thing that really scares me about all this talk about smart cities, because as an implementation of the UN 2030 Agenda for Sustainability, which was a more specific version of the UN Agenda 21, and we see the corporations, just like Apple and the rest of these people, all these corporations working with the government to create this grid of tyranny.
Yeah, you know, David, I think you just hit a home run here by linking these two things together. You know, I think it's maybe the most underreported story of the last 50 or 60 years is how communist China is not just some communist backwater that miraculously came to economic prominence. In fact, from the very beginning, the globalists and the communists in the United States, in the State Department, in the Council on Foreign Relations, deliberately sold China out to the communists. They stabbed Chiang Kai-shek in the back, who was not perfect, but you know, he's certainly better than Chairman Mao, or the butcher who massacred 60, 80 million people. And, you know, we've had so much smoke and gun evidence of this. In 1973, David Rockefeller wrote in the New York Times that the social experiment under Chairman Mao was the most important and the most successful in all of human history. We have George Soros still to this day running around saying that communist China has a better functioning government than the United States, that they should own what he calls the New World Order. And if you look at the tyrannical developments going on over there, not just with the churches, you know, we hit on the Catholic absurdities over there, the persecution. The Protestants and putting fake Protestant ministers there, but also the high-tech totalitarianism, like this Sesame credit that's come out now, where they rank you, they give you a score based on, you know, are your opinions pre-approved? Do you do everything the regime says? Do you have any friends who might be anti-regime? And based on your score, you can either leave the country or you can't. You can get a good job or you can't. You can get on an airplane or not.
Isn't that amazing? And that's what is really, we're being conditioned to that, I believe, Alex. See if you agree with this. I think we're being conditioned to that with Twitter, where, oh, we don't like what you had to say, conservative. We don't agree with your opinion. So we're going to put you, we're going to shadow ban you, or, you know, we're going to kick you off of Facebook, or we're going to take down your channel on YouTube. They're gradually putting this stuff in, giving us a little bit of punishments. Some people, they'll just take off completely. They are conditioning us for this system that has already been implemented in China. We know where this is going.
That's absolutely right. And that is where we are headed. If you listen to the globalists, they'll tell you this. I mean, after Agenda 2030 came out, this is a great example. The communist Chinese propaganda organs were openly trumpeting the fact that the mass murdering regime in Beijing played what they called a crucial role in developing this. Mugabe loves Agenda 2030. So this is where this is all going. And, you know, the fake media, you know, the New York Slimes, the Washington Compost, Foreign Policy, all the rest of these, they're acting like, oh, this is all because of Trump that China is becoming the leader of the New World Order. No, it's not. We were reporting these trends years ago in the New American. In fact, Robert Welch wrote a book, May God Forgive Us Again, showing how the globalist establishment sold China out to the communists right in the very beginning. So people have been sounding the alarm about this for generations, and now the New York Times and all the rest of them are acting like, oh, you know, it's only happening. They're only reluctant leaders of the global agenda because Trump has stepped back from global leadership and the U.S. is losing its prominence. This was a deliberate agenda, and if you want to see what the New World Order looks like, look at communist China for a sneak peek of the future.
Yeah, and it's also the cities. I know you've talked in great deal, you and other people at New American as well, talked a great deal about Agenda 21, about the more specific time. You know, that was just, well, sometime in the 21st century we're going to do this to you. And then they came up with the UN 2030 agenda. And that's all about confining people into the cities. And when we look at the cooperation with these companies like Apple and others who are creating this surveillance technology, it is very important for them to concentrate people into the cities. That's the core part about this. Because if they can get you packed into the cities, into little tiny apartments, you don't own anything. You don't own your apartment. You don't own a vehicle. That's a big part of this. That's why there's such a push and subsidization on all these so-called autonomous vehicles. They're not autonomous. They are controlled from a centralized location, and it's to limit your ability to move about freely and to keep you in there. When you look at the fact that the CEO of Lyft used to be one of these urban planners. These urban planners are typically always central planners, and they want to keep everybody confined in the city. And he's proud of talking about the fact he sees the car as a problem, and he sees cities as a utopia. And so just get rid of the cars, and the cities will be fine. That's the vision that they're pushing to everybody. People need to be aware of that, that they're trying to control us and push us into the cities and trap us in the cities.
That's right. And, you know, I encourage people to read through Agenda 2030 themselves. Unlike Agenda 21, this is not a mammoth document. You can read it in 10, 15 minutes if you're a fast reader. And it goes through, you know, it says national wealth redistribution is not enough. Now we need global wealth redistribution, by which they mean rob the poor and the middle class in America to support the elites and the hostile third world dictators that want to bring us down. They talk about the need for universal health care, by which they mean government control of our health care. They talk about, you know, abortion. They say reproductive freedom for all. They talk about, you know, getting us all packed into these cities. They talk about the global warming hoax. They estimated that the price tag was like $172 trillion to implement this abomination. That's what, 10 times our national GDP. And of course, we're expected to pay for this. So this is, I mean, you could not have laid out a better roadmap for totalitarianism. Of course, they have goal 4 out of the 16 or 17, which deals with education. And they openly talk about turning your children into agents of change who will bring about this globalist world order that they're seeking. I mean, they say it right in the document. Yeah, so yeah. If you read it with an open mind, you'll see very clearly what the agenda is.
And speaking of agents of change, we'll talk about the AstroTurf movement and how they're using these children as agents of change. And I think really one of the things that, as we look at the amazing way that David Hogg and these other individuals are being used, I think one of the most amazing things about this is people need to wake up to how our children are being radicalized to this agenda, and that's the intention of the government education program now. That's the thing that really ought to stand out to people. We ought to look at this and say, what kind of a system do we have that produces radicalized children like this who are demanding that their freedom be taken away? And ours too, of course. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Alex Newman, The New American. I'm David Knight. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Alex Newman of The New American. We've been talking about UN Agenda 2030, smart cities, which have been all the rage at the Consumer Electronics Show at the beginning of the year this year. Every year they have a big show talking about consumer electronics. And you know, just a few years ago we had David Petraeus saying, we're going to be listening to you through your refrigerator, through your appliances. And when we reported that, even though we weren't the original source for that, we reported it was being reported by mainstream media that was there covering the Consumer Electronics Show. But we told people how dangerous this was, and we were mocked, called tinfoil hat conspiracy theorists. Does anybody think that your appliances aren't listening and recording everything that you're doing now? Look at Facebook, look at Google, all this stuff. But this is the high-tech grid of tyranny that is coming. And the way for them to get this through, and I want to talk about this now with Alex, is I want to move on to education, because that is the essential way to get this through. Having our children not know anything about our history, not know anything about the values that formed this country, values that put a premium on individual liberty, that put a premium on liberty and due process, to take away those things so that they don't understand the purpose of the Second Amendment and so forth. All these things wiped out, and yet they're being pushed. What these kids do know, of course, David Hogg says, well, I was in an AP environmental science class, advanced placement in science class, about environmentalism. So he's being taught about climate change. You can bet that all these kids are thoroughly versed in climate change theory, aren't they, Alex?
They sure are, and you know, they'll know all about the 68 different genders and all the rest of it, but they won't know how to read.
It's like Star Trek.
They won't be able to, right, it is. And they won't be able to read their high school diploma. I mean, the government's own numbers show us that about half of Americans either can't read or are so close to not being able to read that we might as well call them illiterate. Some places like Washington, D.C., 2/3 of the population is literally illiterate. And this is all by design. In fact, I wrote a whole book on this with my co-author, Dr. Sam Blumenfeld, who passed away last year. But this is incredibly important. And in fact, I think this is the crux of the issue. If we're going to save America, if we're going to save our liberties and our churches and our families, it is going to have to involve education. And tyrants have always understood this. You know, Hitler understood this. Mao understood this. Lenin understood this. Abraham Lincoln even understood this. You know, the philosophy
even
of the classroom. Right.
Even Plato said, I got to get the kids early. I don't want them to know who their parents are, but I want to get them at a very early age so they only see the state as their parent, you know, in Plato's Republic.
That's right. And, you know, so I'm working on a big project now with some friends, and we'll have a special issue of The New American in September, basically exposing the education system for what it is and urging parents to please protect your children because they are being dumbed down deliberately. I mean, this goes back to Horace Mann in the 1840s. It goes back to John Dewey, who got Rockefeller money. And his goal was literally to get Christianity out of the country, de-Christianize America, override the Constitution, get rid of individualism and individual liberty, and build a communist utopia. In fact, he went to the Soviet Union to see how Lenin was doing it. And these are the people who designed our education system. So if we're going to stay free, we have to protect our kids from this.
They were very explicit about it. You go back to the 1800s and you had these utopian communities that were started in Oneida and other places. And they said, well, it failed because the parents weren't in on this. So we've got to get the kids separated from the parents, and we've got to get the kids at an earlier age, just like Plato said. And so they were saying, you know, therefore we have to have government education. This was starting in the mid-1800s with this, but then they made a science out of it with Horace Mann and Dewey, as you pointed out, with money from the Rockefellers. Is this part of your Freedom Project education, or is that something different?
It is related. Dr. Duke Pesta, who runs the Freedom Project Academy, which is a school where I also teach, is involved with the project. We're bringing The New American in, Lieutenant Colonel E. Ray Moore, who runs Frontline Ministries and the Exodus Mandate. We have Israel Wayne working with us, who's a very well-known Christian homeschool speaker and writer. So we've got a great team here. And what we've decided is that, look, you know, all these other issues are important. You know, Second Amendment, defeat the United Nations, maintain our national security, you know, rein in communist China and all the rest. But all these things are very important. But if we lose on the education issue over a long enough time period, we're going to lose on all the issues because they're brainwashing 80% of our kids. You know, we know from studies, the Nehemiah Institute did a study, 80% of Christian children who go through the government schools will leave the faith, will leave the church. We know, look at the riots and the protests in the street now, these brainwashed zombies demanding that their rights be taken away, for crying out loud. I mean, what more wake-up calls do you need, America?
That's right. You know, when this bombing here in Austin happened, people came out and said, well, this kid 6 or 7 years ago, he was homeschooled. But he wrote this. The only thing that they have on him anywhere on social media is something that he wrote when he went to college. And so I said, yeah, well, he went to college after homeschooling. And that was the first thing that he wrote. And they said, oh, look, he was a conservative and he was Christian. I said, yeah, that was after he was homeschooled. Then there was a 6-year gap where he goes through college and he goes through life and everything. He's like, what do you think happens to a lot of kids?
Right.
You know, even homeschool kids, when they go through the propagandizing of college, it is very, very effective. It is a scientific social engineering that they have going on here.
Oh, it is, David. Absolutely. I mean, Dr. Benjamin Bloom, he pointed out that we can erase everything parents have done in an hour if we do it right. So, I mean, these people are dead serious. Mm-hmm. They've been studying this for 100 years. They are master manipulators. And, you know, teachers are just as much victims here as the students. They don't understand what they're a part of. They didn't sign up for this. They went into teaching because they love kids and they want to educate the next generation. And yet we have a system that is deliberately dumbing down the kids, that is deliberately causing widespread illiteracy, that is deliberately hiding history and science and literature and, you know, all the accumulated knowledge of mankind over millennia. And we are going to die as a civilization if we allow this to continue. And that's ultimately the end goal, erase Western civilization, yes, erase our liberties and our country.
That's right. Yeah, that's why they're tearing down statues of every historical figure, because, you know, hey, racism. I mean, even Larry King yesterday was saying, we got to get rid of the Second Amendment because, you know, racism was used to control people. The people with guns enslaved the people who didn't have guns. And it's like, well, Larry, even if you were right about history and you have absolutely no idea what you're talking about with history, can't you see the problem with that? You don't take away. I don't want my guns taken away because I don't want to be a slave. So if you don't understand that this is fundamentally about individual liberty, and if that's not the issue here, I remember a story, a guy goes to kindergarten and the teacher is telling him about all the different processes that they're doing and everything in this progressive kindergarten. And he says, yeah, but what's the purpose of this? And they couldn't answer it. They could tell you all the details of the process. You're talking about the teachers that are in the process. All the details of the process, but they don't know what the end result is pushing them to. But the people who put together the curriculum do. They do know what the end process is. The teachers are just there to implement this. And they're not, and the parents are not thinking about what the end process is here. What is their definition, the system's definition of an educated person? Is it somebody who fully embraces climate change? Is it somebody who fully embraces everything that the state wants to do, that wants to give all power to the state? Is that the end product? Yes, it is. And the teachers often don't understand that. They don't understand the importance of individual liberty.
That's exactly right. And in fact, they've been bragging about this. Now, UNESCO puts out public reports. They put out press releases that I get in my inbox saying, hey, we're going to change all the values and attitudes and the skills of children at the global level. They've got a world core curriculum now that they want taught in every school, literally developed by a woman who founded the Lucifer Publishing Company. I mean, these standards were created in honor of her, based on her teachings. This is weird, bizarre, sick stuff. And if parents don't understand this, I can guarantee it, over a long enough time span, you know, give it a generation, maybe two, maybe even three or four if we're really good, you know, we are going to lose our freedoms. And it's, you know, that's what it comes down to. If you don't take action, we're going to lose it all.
You're right. And New American, I mean, it's stuff that is beyond just socialism and government control and climate change and so forth. They're now going in, and you reported multiple times about it at the New American, talking about the transgender, gender fluidity, gender confusion that is being pushed on kids at the age of kindergarten. These kids have no idea about what is going on with gender and sexuality at that age. And they're doing this as a kind of a mental abuse to these kids, the American Pediatric Society has said.
That's right. And, you know, UNESCO just came out with a document in January. It's basically sex education standards for the world. They want this in every school on the planet. They want to start at age five. They want to teach the kids about masturbation. They want to teach them about sodomy and fornication. And, you know, you're thinking, are you kidding me? Five-year-olds, you know, they play with toy cars. You know, are you kidding me? And yet this is what's going on. And there's, you know, the LGBT agenda is really the tip of the spear for an even more subversive movement. What they're doing is they're waging a war on truth and on God and on liberty and on facts and on, you know, the way God has created the world. And the end result, again, is going to be a disaster. And just look at the fruit of this. You know, if you want to judge things by its fruit, look at the fruit of our education system. You know, 50 years ago, we didn't have school shootings and teen suicides and abortions and gang warfare in our schools. This is all a deliberate result of what we're seeing in the schools.
And you look at Rex Tillerson, a guy who at the Boy Scouts pushed homosexual scouts and homosexual scout leaders. Then after he left, they started pushing transgenderism. He goes to the State Department. The State Department funds $600,000 to push gender fluidity on Kenyan boys because they got toxic masculinity. This is the insanity that we see everywhere. Thank you so much for joining us, Alex Newman. And you can find his work at thenewamerican.com. Thank you so much, Alex. We'll be right back.
Making sense common again. It's your host, David Knight.
Well, we've had Jeff Sessions come back and say that no, he is not going to appoint a special counsel to look into the FBI, the Clinton Foundation, Uranium One, and so forth. But he does say that he has put somebody on it within the Department of Justice to investigate that. So he says, while we continue to believe the appointment of a special counsel, a second special counsel is necessary, said the Goodlatte and Gowdy, who responded to this. They said this is a step in the right direction. So he says, we're going to investigate this internally. We think the American people have confidence in the Department of Justice. I don't know. he needs to start doing something about these activist judges to get our confidence. But we also need to get some information about what's going on with this. We'd just like to know that it's being investigated. And in a sense, I don't want to see a proliferation of quote-unquote special counsels. You know, they're very careful to call them special counsels instead of special prosecutors. A special prosecutor law that was put into effect was allowed to expire in 1999 because people saw that it was being used as a witch hunt. And they didn't want to see that continuing. Neither party did. But at least when they had a law they had a defined process. There is no defined process for this Mueller investigation. And that's why, personally, I would like to see them shut down the Mueller investigation and then define what a process is going to be with this. You know, interestingly enough, most of the special prosecutors that have been appointed throughout history have been appointed by the president. They haven't been appointed to investigate presidents like they have in recent times. But they were appointed by the president to investigate widespread political corruption. And that's why the president would appoint them. They needed to be independent of the system that was so corrupt. And this is something that goes back into the 1800s. We've had special prosecutors doing that type of thing. But when we look at what is happening now, at least when we had a law for a special prosecutor, they had a process. You would go to the attorney general, you would offer some evidence. The attorney general would say, yeah, it looks like there's something here. And furthermore, I don't think that we can honestly investigate it within the Department of Justice. See, that's what Jeff Sessions is saying. I think we can investigate this honestly within the Department of Justice. Well, we'll see. But when they made that determination, then they would say, all right, now we're going to appoint, the attorney general would appoint a three-judge panel. Then the three-judge panel would select a special prosecutor. After they said, well, there's evidence of a crime, and they were specific about what that crime was. It wasn't just this broad thing. Well, we want to look to see if there's any Russians underneath any bushes around here. We've had some interesting moves in the last couple of days we're going to talk about in this next hour. President Trump saying, hey, we're going to get out of ISIS soon. We're going to get out of Syria soon because we have taken care of ISIS for the most part. That's a good move. Happy to see that. We could bring all those troops and resources home and put them on our border, right, President Trump? And so I think it's that's a good move. Hopefully that will happen. But they should have a defined process if they're going to do any more special prosecutors. But there really does need to be an investigation. And when we look at what has happened, there's an article on AC2 News. In the dumbest move since removing Bob's Burgers, Netflix has hired Susan Rice, and their stock immediately tanked 5% in one day. So I don't know how they think that that's going to help them, hiring Susan Rice. As one person said, maybe she can find that movie that they said was the basis of the Benghazi attacks on 9/11. Remember that? The Innocence of Muhammad or Muslims. It was one or the other. Nobody had ever heard of that. But Hillary Clinton and Susan Rice sold us that lie and stuck to it. That's our story, and we're sticking to it. And it was just as absurd as what Theresa May and Nikki Haley are doing right now with the Russian poisoning, quote-unquote, the nerve gas poisoning of Skripal, and trying to use that to escalate the Cold War. And they have. Now Russia has thrown out 60 diplomats from the United States and shut down the embassy there. All right, stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
You found it. It's the real news. From the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Well, an electric Ponzi scheme may be about to get shorted. And I'm talking about getting shorted on Wall Street. Elon Musk, the king of crony capitalism, as Eric Peters has called him, or as the American conservative calls him, the government-subsidized Pied Piper. You know, I don't have any problem with anybody's got big dreams, but at some point, you got to be able to pull them off. I have a problem with people whose big dreams are based on getting massive government subsidies. And the government subsidizes these things because the consumers in America and in Europe and elsewhere don't want to buy them. And so I, as a taxpayer, have to subsidize a product that nobody wants to buy, you know, like Solyndra or like Tesla. And I am the one who have to subsidize expensive electric cars for these Silicon Valley Solons out there that they can drive around and virtue signal everybody, oh, I'm driving an electric car. Aren't I environmentally friendly? And I'm being robbed for that kind of stuff. While the government tries to force people, try to shut down one industry, just like Obama tried to shut down the coal industry. Did a pretty good job of it, too. And force and then subsidize Cylinder, which failed. The government comes in, holds a gun to our head, tells us we're going to subsidize Tesla and the schemes of Elon Musk. And they're going to shut down diesel and internal combustion engines because that's what they want to do. And we can talk about the why of that, but there's no question that that's what they want to do. They want to shut down certain industries. They want to shut down coal. They want to shut down, quote unquote, fossil fuel. And it's not fossil fuel anyway. If you buy into the peak oil theory that's been lied to us by the CIA, sold that to us. But I have a real problem with companies whose business model is based on government subsidies and coercion of consumers. You know, they're offering a carrot to the rich people, but the rest of us get a stick of a tax increase or a deficit that we get to pay. You know, they borrow the money and then we get to pay it back with interest to the Federal Reserve. And then they get to determine what the interest rate is going to be. Yeah, I got a big problem with this whole system. So I'm not going to be crying any tears for Elon Musk, as many of you know. As the American conservative points out to his many admirers, he is a seer, a tech superstar, a marketing genius. I say he's a P.T. Barnum. I think the most recent evidence of that was his firecracker with the cherry Tesla that even he admitted was a piece of junk, put that on the top of it and shot it off. That was the day that he had his last quarterly reports coming out. And I said, well, what's he going to do to top that? Because he's got another one coming out, and Wall Street is looking at this. You got Moody's pulling back. You got a lot of hedge funds pulling back and saying, I don't see any way out of this. He's burning cash like a SpaceX rocket. And this is going to come to an end. He can continue to get equity funding if the people believe. You must believe. He can fly. It's like Peter Pan. You got to say, he can fly. He can fly. And so you do that, and then people will buy into his equity debt or they'll buy his bonds or whatever. But when that bubble bursts, then it gets increasingly harder for people to sell his stock, to sell his bonds, and then things start to go in a very rapid spiral downward. And so it's kind of interesting. And one of the things is taking it down this week is not just that they're going to miss the quarter one Model 3 production numbers, which they haven't been able to come anywhere close to it. So most people are not surprised about that. But it's also about this most recent crash of the Tesla autopilot. And just like with Uber, you got these other people coming out, well, that's not our problem. We don't have a problem like that with our autopilot cars. And then Tesla does it. Says, well, that's not us either. So, you know, it's like it's just this constantly moving target. Oh, that wasn't us. That was the human who did it. Oh, that wasn't our car company. That was somebody else. And again, you want to drive around in a car with your hands off the wheel while you play with Facebook or something like that? Fine. Do it on a private road. I don't want to be a part of your public experiment. I was not informed that you were going to be doing this. I did not give my authorization for doing this. And I am mightily offended that the government that has taken away so many freedoms and tickets us at every opportunity in the name of safety just says, oh, we don't care anymore about safety. All we care about is making sure that these autonomous cars work so that we can take away your private ownership of cars and keep you locked up in the city and know everywhere you go and tax you every mile that you travel. Do you understand that's what they're doing? I'll say it again today. The military strategy to control a population is to control the way they move, communicate, and shoot. Wake up to the movement part of this. I think those of you who are listening, those of you who are conservatives and libertarians, understand that there is a full-blown attack on the First and the Second Amendment. It's an attack on our liberty, attack on our freedom. And I've said before, we're not fighting for our Second Amendment. We're not fighting for our guns. We're fighting for our liberty. We're not fighting for the First Amendment. We're not fighting for free speech. We're fighting for our liberty. Those are expressions of our liberty. Our liberty is also expressed in our ability to move and travel, even though we don't have an expressed protection of that. It is still implied in the Ninth Amendment and the Tenth Amendment. And we're not going to give that up, I hope. But there's also the crash that just happened. And the man who died was an Apple engineer. He died from crashing his Model X, and he had previously complained to Tesla about the autopilot features. His family says that they took his Tesla to the dealer, and they complained that on multiple occasions, the autopilot veered toward the same barrier that eventually killed him. The one that his Model X hit on Friday when he died, last Friday, crashed and burned. Because that's, you know, every technology has got its Achilles heels, doesn't it? And one of the Achilles heels of these electric cars is that they turn into a raging inferno when the batteries are busted. Take a look at the car crash of Richard Hammett of Grand Tour to get an idea how quickly and how bad that can happen and how it can take days to get this thing put out. I mean, literally. Tesla had only made limited commentary. They're still not confirming as to whether or not the autopilot was definitely engaged at the time of the crash. They said the reason for this crash was so severe is that the crash attenuator, this is what Tesla said. So, see, again, it's not their fault. The problem is that the crash attenuator, the safety barrier that was supposed to reduce the impact on the concrete lane divider, had either been removed or had been crushed in a prior accident without having been replaced. So how do they know that? I mean, it's either there or it isn't there, right? Immediately, they're casting blame on other things. And we saw this before. We saw, remember when the other guy who I think was a former Special Forces soldier, he had a Tesla and he was sitting there playing with his phone or something because he didn't need to drive. It had the wheel and it didn't see a big semi-trailer that was white, couldn't make it out, and killed him. And they said immediately, oh, it wasn't an autopilot. It wasn't an autopilot. And so at first everybody goes, oh, look, a guy died from autopilot. And then Tesla comes out and said, no, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. And so then all the media dutifully responded with that. And then the NTSC did a investigation. And they said, no, he was on autopilot. But by that time, everybody's attention span was moved on. We had seen a couple of more stunts from Elon Musk. And there was many other things in the news. And nobody paid any attention to that. But anyway, they say, regardless, shares of Tesla are down almost 50 handles in the last 2 days. And the company's bond yields spiked significantly yesterday, indicating a seriously increased concern with the company's ability to generate cash. Even CNBC had harsh words for the company, stating that it could be an easy move for the stock to push under $200. And that comes on top of the fact that they're now having a big recall of Model S. So we'll have to wait and see. They're going down rapidly, just like Hillary Clinton. You know, she's getting paid 90% less than she did for a speech she's doing in New Jersey. She's only going to be paid $250,000. I guess she doesn't have anything to sell anymore. All right. Stay with us. Be right back. I'm David Knight. As I said, Hillary Clinton's going to get $25,000 from Rutgers for speaking. And her stock has dropped very rapidly. Maybe even faster than Facebook and Tesla, some of these other tech stocks that are out there. She doesn't have anything to sell. And it's kind of like Tesla. They can't build the cars that they pre-booked. She doesn't have any favors to give. You know, it was H.L. Mencken that said an election is an advanced auction of stolen goods. Boy, does that describe the Clinton Foundation. And they've said, well, this isn't coming from any tax subsidies. It's coming from a private endowment. It's like, wow, make sure you don't give money to Rutgers, I guess, if they're going to throw the money away like that. But they said that she's going to donate the honorarium to a charitable foundation. I wonder which charitable foundation would that be? Would that be the Clinton Foundation? I don't know. She never registered it as a charitable foundation. It'll be interesting to see, as Charles Ortel's been on our program several times and said they never registered in foreign countries. There's a lot of state attorney generals that are looking into this. There might be. She is in a position where any number of governments at different levels could come after her. Even if Jeff Sessions doesn't have the spine to do it, other people could. But just to show you another reason why nobody is paying big bucks to hear Hillary Clinton, here's a little bit of what she had to say recently.
But I do worry that what's happened to the Republican Party is that it's being held captive by a very small group of powerful forces.
Yeah. Just blink.
We've seen the power of the NRA, for example. And
oh, yeah, let's call out the NRA. Do it again, Hillary. That's going to help their fundraising.
Some of the very wealthy patrons of the Republican Party are so demanding. Mm. If you deviate from their stated requests, they will fund somebody to run against you in a Republican primary.
Oh, wow.
They will dry up your money. They will make it really difficult. Now,
an example of why her speech prices are rapidly falling. kind of recycled, absolutely, totally irrelevant. And the Democrats are desperately hoping she'll go away. And we're kind of hoping that she'll stick around. Keep talking, Hillary. We love it when you talk. You make our points for us without us even having to comment on it. You know, we've seen the move. The big success of Roseanne's reboot of her series. And now even Fox is considering bringing back Tim Allen's Last Man Standing. Why would Fox cancel that? You know, many people think, oh, Fox, they're so conservative. Well, their news organization is conservative because Rupert Murdoch realized that there was a vacuum where there was no competition on cable news for the conservative viewer. Just like I think maybe somebody at ABC realized that with Roseanne. And so so Fox News was created, a conservative thing. And I think this is very telling, the fact that as talk radio is very conservative, Rupert Murdoch decided that he would put a lot of leftist talk radio show hosts on. Now, that didn't catch on. And I think that's for a variety of reasons. I think people who listen to radio during the day, for the most part, they're people who are working, a lot of independent businessmen who will advertise on that radio program to keep it going, who will advertise locally to fund that station. That's a very important thing for people who do have businesses in the area. It's a very effective way to get a high return on your money on radio. Everybody is so preoccupied now with the internet, but radio advertising is still very cost effective. And a lot of small local businesses understand that, and so they advertise on the radio programs. But I think there's a disproportionate amount of the audience that involves people who have their own business and so forth. So I think it's one of the reasons why the liberal talk radio show hosts never caught on, even though Rupert Murdoch saw a business opportunity there. But then he also saw an opportunity in terms of entertainment to go really, really hard left. And so he had things like Married with Children, where they're pushing a very, very different view of the family, let's just put it that way, than was traditional. And perhaps that was a part of Roseanne coming back in. In fact, they're going to have a 9-year-old who's cross-dressing. Maybe that was something I had to throw in to get past ABC. It's like, okay, it's going to be a Trump supporter, but we're going to put in a cross-dressing 9-year-old. Okay, all right, we'll do it then. I don't know. But Tim Allen was thoroughly conservative. And he had this to say about the people who control what you say on entertainment. Here's Tim Allen.
I was invited by, we did a VIP thing for went to the Veterans Ball, and so I went to go see the Democrats and Republicans. Yeah, I went to the inauguration.
I'm not attacking you.
You get this town. I'm not kidding. You got to be real careful around here. You know, you get beat up. If you don't believe what everybody believes,
it's
like 30s Germany. I don't know what happened. If you're not part of the group, you know what we believe is right. I go, well, I might have a problem with that. I'm a comedian. I like going on both.
It's exactly right. You have to toe the party line, as Jimmy Kimmel has done so effectively, as Stephen Colbert has done so effectively. So, you know, here you have a sitcom and say, well, I'm sorry, that's too political. But it's good for us to have late night comedy be very, very political. As a matter of fact, Stephen Colbert is getting a special sponsorship from Google. Special sponsorship, really kind of going along the lines of what sponsors for NPR have done. You know, they don't do commercials where they advertise a product, but they'll do a prestige placement there. And they'll say, well, this is paid for by such and such a company and blah, 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 brings you this. That's what they're going to do for Stephen Colbert. They want to have him have more airtime so they can sell more of the political agenda that Google agrees with. So Google will sponsor a commercial-free segment entitled More Show, presented by Google's Nest Hello Video Doorbell. There you go. The tech behemoth says, Breitbart hopes that the world's preeminent member of the resistance, hashtag resistance, will be able to sell their brand without actually selling it using a method of advertising that's only just now gaining momentum. Of course, it's been used, as I said, for national propaganda radio. I like to call NPR the Nazi propaganda radio because, you know, the Nazis called themselves National Socialists, and the people who are doing the programming at NPR, they are Nationalist Socialists. And it is propaganda. That's what NPR, in my opinion, stands for. But that's their model of funding. And so that's good. Yeah, you do that. I really hate to see the terms, the resistance and fake news being taken over by the left. I really hate that. They really, whenever you come up with a label, they'll steal it if it's effective. They did that to the term liberal. Liberal in the 18th century used to mean somebody who supported liberty. A liberal education used to mean an education that wasn't socially engineered to turn you into a Marxist. It meant that you had the tools of learning so that you were liberated to pursue what you were interested in and to continue your education. That was what a liberal education originally meant. Then they confiscate that. Then they come up with their own terms like, oh, dreamers. Oh, we're marching for our lives. You're marching for your guns. Yeah, don't fall into that trap. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Universal deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
As we're going to break, I said it is particularly annoying to me how the left continues to take the moral high ground by the terminology that they use. Say, oh, we're going to defend dreamers. Well, who wants to attack somebody's dreams? They're foreign citizens, criminally trespassing, demanding that we pay for their education. And then taking our jobs, competing with our children for jobs. That's what, but I call them dreamers, and they're okay, right? Or the way the left has taken over the terms resistance and fake news, which we used to, you know, Alex Jones created those terms. We are the resistance. I mean, for years and years, we're the resistance. Then Hillary Clinton said it, then it became a rallying cry of the left. And now they've taken over the term resistance, just like they took over the term liberal. You know, I had to create the term libertarian. That's my Twitter handle, because I want people to understand that I'm not with the Libertarian Party. I'm for liberty. And I think the Libertarian Party now has left. We got to come up with another name, because we had classical liberal, then we had, that meant the people who originally said, yeah, we're for freedom in terms of civil liberties, as well as economic liberties and private property and so forth. And the liberals took that, the socialist planners, they took that term, because it sounded good. Everybody wanted to be a liberal. Now nobody wants to be a liberal. They've trashed that. So now they're calling themselves progressives because everybody wants progress, but they're progressing us into slavery. So that term is going to have to be replaced. What'll be the next term? I don't know. Then the Libertarian Party comes up and said, all right, they've taken the term, you know, nobody understands what a classical liberal is. It sounds too much like a liberal. They've stolen that term, even when we put classical in front of it. So we'll call ourselves libertarians. And that was like libertarian. That's kind of strange. Then it became accepted, and people started to understand that it was about liberty. And then the Libertarian Party didn't realize it was about liberty. If you look at the people that they ran in the last election, you're like, come on. Well, you know, William Weld out of Massachusetts, that was the name, right? Weld, I think it was. Yeah. And Gary Johnson, give me a break. They're Democrats or statists. They even repudiated their non-aggression principle, saying, I have a right to defend myself. I'm not going to initiate the use of force, but I don't believe that anymore. It's like, what? So I call myself libertarian. You can find me on Twitter as libertarian. But now they've stolen the term resistance, You are the resistance. Remember, that was the slogan of Alex Jones for the longest time. Then we started fake news, and President Trump picked up fake news. So Hillary Clinton picked up resistance, and President Trump picked up fake news, made it really big. And then the fake news picked it up and started calling everybody else fake news. The people who are the real fake news. And so now it's gotten really confusing. I don't know. Where are we? Just take a look at the context here. But here we are. Fake news 2.0. As Technology Review says, personalized, optimized, even harder to stop. And see, what they're telling us is not that the censorship in the name of diversity and inclusiveness. Yeah, we're going to shut you out of the marketplace of ideas in the name of inclusiveness. And we're going to not allow conservatives in the name of diversity. It's Orwellian doublespeak that they have all the time. And so now what they're telling us is, CIA, a technology supplier to the CIA says, this fake news is about to get really bad. We're going to have artificial intelligence is going to be automating it and optimizing it. It's like, yeah, I know. It's already being done. It's called Facebook. It's called Google. It's called Twitter. That's the AI, the algorithmic fake news and censorship that's being put out there. But now they're flipping it around. They're flipping it around and they're saying, well, the automation of generation fake news is going to make it very difficult. So what they're saying is we have to up our game with algorithms in order to censor conservatives and libertarians and people we don't agree with because they're going to get automated. And this is the CIA, MIT, all these people. These are the people who are, probably if you look up this company, MTech, it says a technology supplier to the CIA, they probably were created by the CIA with Incutel. CIA's got its own venture capital firm. Starting companies like that, Palantir and so forth. I mean, look at Cambridge Analytica. I can't believe that everybody is freaking out over 50 million people when Obama had a data person who said, yeah, we got everybody in the United States. That's more than 50 million people, folks. And we look at Cambridge Analytica. I'm not defending anything that they did. I'm just saying, look at Palantir. I did reports on Palantir 5 years ago. Now, that's a company you should be afraid of. You want to look at analytics? Those people are very scary. Even consciously referencing the crystal stones out of Tolkien as a metaphor, saying, this is this communication device. And you'd have people would talk to each other through that. But then the dark side got a hold of that technology or that magic, because the magic is like technology. Was it Arthur C. Clarke that said technology sufficiently advanced is the same as magic? Looks like magic, it's just a black box. You don't know how it works. But they consciously referenced that. And in the novel, what happened was the dark side got a hold of this. And if you were trying to communicate with people in the way that it was originally intended, they would be able to watch you. Kind of sounds like what's going on with metadata and analytics on the internet right now. And not only that, they would be able to look inside of you. Predict your behavior, maybe, huh? Yeah, that's what they're doing right now. Meanwhile, we got Harvard announcing a change to the lyrics of their school's alma mater. They want something that is, guess what? More inclusive. Isn't that nice? We're going to exclude these any references to the Puritans because we want to be more inclusive. Let's exclude the Christians. Interestingly enough, Harvard was the first university. It was founded as a Christian seminary. And this song that was the alma mater, whatever, two-century-old hymn, was sung by students and graduates during celebratory moments at the school. And the last line of it was, "Till the stock of the Puritans die." Well, I don't think they have any Puritans left at Harvard anymore. I'd be surprised if they have any Christians left there. Probably certainly not in the faculty. No evidence of that whatsoever. It was originally a seminary, and now it has become something of a seminary of the satanic left. So they have taken out the Puritans and the phrase, "till the stock of the Puritans die," and is now, "till the stars in the firmament die." There you go. So let's get rid of it. Let's purge any reference whatsoever, no matter how oblique, to Christianity. Let's purge that out in the name of inclusiveness. Meanwhile, Tumblr is now deleting conservative accounts. I don't use Tumblr. I guess I won't ever be using Tumblr. Tumblr says the Red Pill Times just sent me an email claiming that they deleted some accounts that I had followed or posts that I had liked or reblogged because guess what? They were found to have been affiliated with Russians. Yes, that's right. The Russians are coming at us from every direction. And the Russians are allied with conservatives. Yeah, that's right. Some of the accounts that they listed, I know, were in fact, were not linked to the IRA, he said, or the IRA, the Internet Research Agency, or any organization. They were just normal people running Tumblr blogs. I know this because Tumblr told me in an email which accounts specifically they had terminated in reference to my account. He said there were five of them. Two of them, I know the owners very, very well. And then he says at the end of the email, they lecture him about hashtag democracy. Democracy requires transparency, they said, and an informed electorate. And we take our disclosure responsibility very seriously. Yes, they are going to censor so they can inform you. And they're going to make sure that they control the information that you get so we can have fair and open elections. It's gone completely full circle. Remember? When we had WikiLeaks and Julian Assange give us the information about Hillary Clinton and the DNC that was provided by a whistleblower inside. It was not even tapped by somebody outside over the Internet, as William Binney and many others have told us. And so that had to be shut down. We had to come up with this fake narrative about the Russians because you were not allowed to see that information. See, if anybody hacked the election, they accused Julian Assange, it's because he told us the truth about Hillary Clinton. And so that's what they're going to do in the upcoming election. Facebook is aiming to fight election manipulation this year, 2018. We'll tell you about that when we come back. Stay with us. Welcome back for our final segment. Before we get back to the news, I just want to remind you, and we're going to be talking about some of the things that President Trump has said about foreign policy. About war and peace. There's some good news in here. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. Before we do, real quickly, I want to remind you about the products that we sell at InfoWarsStore.com. That's what funds this program. You have products to clean your air, products to clean your water, products to clean your body. We have things that will focus your mind, and it supports the program, supports free speech, supports your right to decide by listening to different viewpoints. That's why we really do appreciate your support with the products that you buy and why it's so important for you to support this if you want to be able to make up your own mind and to hear different viewpoints, to hear the information analyzed and from people who are not intimidated by boycotts because we sell directly to you. So let me tell you about some of the specials that we have right now at InfoWarsStore.com. We talked about cleaning your air. We got Alexa Pure Breeze, great way to clean the air in your house. You know, the air in your house, as we get into these seasons especially, right now we got, you can open up your windows, but most places you're going to get a lot of pollen. You want to get that cleaned out too. But during the winter and the summer, you're trying to heat or cool your house. You tighten up the, close up the house pretty tight, and that can concentrate a lot of things that you want to purify out of there. Or you just might have odors from cooking or whatever. It's a great way to purify the air in your house. Alexa Pure Breeze, very silent, very attractive, very effective. $50 off at InfoWarsStore.com. We also have CellForce for 50% off. And we have a combo pack. BrainForce Plus, the Real Red Pill, and the Mind and Body Challenge. So you can get that 50% off of that combo pack. And again, as I said, focus your mind. Open your mind. Make sure that you have open lines of communication. Push back against this effort to shut down anybody that doesn't agree with the controllers at Central Data Processing. So take a look at the specials we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We really do appreciate your support. As we're going to break, I said, yeah, Facebook is bragging about the fact that they are now going to fight election manipulation. You know, when they talk about how, oh, we have fake news 2.0, it's going to get more algorithmic, and we're going to have AI involved here. So we're going to have to step up our game. And that's what Facebook is saying here. They're giving us a warning shot that they're going to get more controlling with their censorship. Company executives detailed new initiatives to prevent foreign interference. Those pesky Russians out there again. Now, foreign interference, Russians everywhere. and to anticipate new tactics that will undermine the November elections. Because, you know, every time the globalists lose, whether it was with Trump or with Brexit or with the Italian elections or with the elections in Catalonia, it's always the Russians. They're the ones. I mean, it's amazing how they can influence elections. Hillary Clinton can spend 1,000 times more than the supposed Russians did in Facebook. And she can do it all before the election when they only spent half of what they did before the election. The other half was after the election. And yet they can still beat her. Those guys are good. We've gotten progressively better over the last year and a half, said a spokesman for Facebook. Yeah, they've gotten progressively more so. They get more and more progressive every day. Literally, they get more and more progressive. And so now they said they're going to focus on paid ads. Again, another signal that you're not going to be on Facebook, especially if it's news. You're going to be purged. It's going to be fake unless people pay for it. You know, kind of like Cambridge Analytica paid for it. They were okay. And we have Robin Kelly, a Democrat congresswoman from Illinois, ranking member of Congress, part of the Congress's IT oversight subcommittee, says, oh, she's pleased. I bet she is. They're going to have third-party fact-checkers to stamp out fake news everywhere you go. Meanwhile, just in case you cared about privacy anymore, Mozilla Firefox is now adding a new extension just to prevent Facebook from attacking your privacy. It's going to be a Firefox add-on that blocks Facebook from tracking users when they click on ads or links that take them off of the site because they follow you everywhere. They even listen to what you have to say. They keep a complete log of everybody you talk to, everything you did. And as this one article points out, and I'm not going to get into details of this, but you think Facebook knows a lot about you? Well, Google knows even more. They're far worse, from deleted files to location history. And that's absolutely true. Absolutely true. And finally, one last Facebook item here, and then I want to get to what President Trump was talking about last couple of days. Going back to this memo that has now surfaced from a Facebook executive saying, well, you know, so we can connect more people. That's what we really want to do. It can be a bad thing if they make it negative. Maybe it costs a life by exposing somebody to bullies. Maybe somebody dies in a terrorist attack. It's coordinated on our tools, yet we're still going to connect people. And the ugly truth is that we believe in connecting people so deeply that anything that allows us to connect more people more often is good. We don't care if people die. Yeah. They've got an agenda, folks. It's about making money, but it's also about controlling you in order to make money. That's really what they're doing. They're buying and selling you. You are the product. All right, President Trump said something yesterday that I think is worth listening to, and it's something that I've been hoping to hear for quite some time. Concerned about the escalation with the neocons about war, especially concerned about John Bolton, and I hope he sticks to this as John Bolton comes in, because John Bolton can be very persuasive. He is a very good communicator, but he's absolutely wrong on these interventionist wars. But here's what President Trump had to say yesterday about Syria.
We spent, and I was against it from the beginning. They try and say, well, maybe not. I was against it from the beginning. And by the way, we're knocking the hell out of ISIS. We'll be coming out of Syria like very soon. Let the other people take care of it now. Very soon. We're coming out. We're going to have 100% of the caliphate, as they call it, sometimes referred to as land. We've taken it all back quickly. But we're going to be coming out of there real soon. Going to get back to our country.
That's very good, because the neocons have been trying to push us into a conflict there, getting us right up. You know, we were not invited, by the way, into Syria. And if we had not, with John McCain and others, armed and trained ISIS, provided them with money, with material support, with training and so forth, if we had not done that, the Russians and the Syrians could have gotten them out of there a long time ago. Last summer, President Trump shut down the CIA program that was arming ISIS that John McCain had been pushing along with the neocons in Congress. But I was concerned because we still didn't see the United States leaving Syria, and they're still there. And we have been getting a lot of very close involvement with the Russians, shooting at each other and so forth. That could trigger a broader war, which is what the neocons want. People like Nikki Haley, people like John Bolton. John Bolton, who defended the Iraq war, as President Trump said, one of the worst decisions we've ever made, has defended it to the end. He is a nationalist. Good. He's going to throw out the holdovers from the Obama administration. Good. As long as President Trump keeps him on a short leash about this stuff and stays true to what he said he was going to do. The U.S. has spent $7 trillion in the Middle East. You know, we spent $1 trillion in Afghanistan. As I said before, yesterday was the 45th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War. Can't we declare victory and leave Afghanistan too? Leave Syria? Take that money and use it to protect our border? That was what President Trump was saying. That's why Schumer and NPR and all these other people are really concerned that he's very serious about this. He should be. He should be serious about it. He also pointed out, as they point out in this Zero Hedge article, they talked about the wall, 32,000 U.S. troops guarding the border between North and South Korea, while the U.S. border with Mexico is not protected. Good. I'm really glad to hear President Trump talking about this. I hope that he does something with this. I hope that he gets tough with the military. He said, hey, we can fund this out of the military. They're rich now. They got a lot of money. Yeah, they waste a lot of money. As I said before, they wasted in Afghanistan last year $3.2 billion in this gigantic omnibus bill that funded Planned Parenthood, that funded sanctuary cities. And they only gave Trump $1.6 billion, and then they put all kinds of prohibitions about things that could be done for border security. President Trump said yesterday, is there something a little bit wrong with that? He asked the crowd. Yeah, it is. He shouldn't have signed that bill, quite frankly. But he can still take that money from the Pentagon. He is the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. And if he doesn't need a declaration of war to put the military in foreign countries, and he doesn't need a declaration of war to build foreign fortifications in foreign countries and part of these wars, and he can do the same thing to protect our border. And he must do that. And it's starting to sound like he's thinking of doing that. Take some of that $7 trillion that we spent in the Middle East. We could build our infrastructure instead of blowing up other people's infrastructure. We'd rebuild our country before we rebuild their country. And you know that phone call that they talked so much about that got H.R. McMaster out of the door a little bit earlier than he was going to be going anyway? Where they said, oh, don't congratulate Putin and so forth. One of the things that's now come out that he said in it was he said, hey, let's have some peace talk. You know, he was diplomatic. Congratulations on your election. Let's get together and talk about arms race. But the other thing that's just now come out, he said, if you want an arms race, we can do that, but I'll win. So he wasn't caving in to Putin. It's important to understand that, how the people, the neocons there, were trying to spin that conversation.